Love it, hate it. There's no doubt Stanley Kubrick's 2001 A Space Odyssey has had a lasting impact. Here it is, 50 years after its 1968 release, and it's still being celebrated.
Open the pod bay doors, Hal.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
What are you talking about, Hal?
This conversation can serve no purpose anymore. Goodbye.
Tonight, there will be a showing of the film at Hill Auditorium at the University of Michigan. And the music, which is so identified with the film, will be performed by a live orchestral and choral accompaniment. Joining us now is the president of the University Musical Society, Matthew Van Beesen, along with the dean of the University of Michigan College of Engineering, Alec Gallimore. Welcome to both of you. I'm going to start with Alec first. So here's this sci-fi movie with music presented by the University of Michigan. What do we have an engineer in here for? Why are you interested in that film?
Well, it's an inspirational film for many of us who are in the space business, first of all. But it also showed technologies that we take for granted. So, for example, it was actually the first movie that I'm aware of that showed iPads decades before they were invented. And it has a very interesting mix of artistry, both visually and through music, but also predicting with eerie accuracy the future of technology, showing space shuttles, space stations, and things of that nature.
So how old were you when you first saw it?
4 years old, and I remember seeing it live in Washington, D.C.
What kind of impact did it have on you?
Well, it caused me to become the person I am. I guess you can say I'm a rocket scientist, and I developed some of the plasma propulsion technologies that the movie identified would be needed to send astronauts to Jupiter.
When I started talking, I said love it or hate it. And the reason I said hate it is because I read a paper in Participations, the Journal of Audience and Reception Studies, and it reviewed the letters mailed to Kubrick shortly after the film was released. And a lot of people found it incoherent or really disturbing. What was your impression the first time you saw it, Matthew?
Well, I've been a Kubrick fan for a long time. It was not the first film of his that I ever saw. Probably The Shining was. Somehow my parents let me see that when I was a young person. But it's – even today, 50 years later, it's incredibly audacious as a film. It's audacious certainly scientifically, but it's also audacious artistically in the way in which it's constructed. And so, you know, from my vantage point in the film, I mean, this is a work of art that transcends filmmaking. It transcends normal sort of artistic parameters.
And that, I think that was not a universal feeling, though, at the time. Not all the critics were a big fan.
Well, I think it had very critically mixed reception. And if when you watch the film again, you see those opening sequences of The Dawn of Man, which is the first chapter of the film. And you can just imagine what the MGM studio execs were thinking at the time. I mean, they must have thought, how did we ever allow this person to make this work? Because even today it feels audacious 50 years later. So you can imagine what it would have felt like in 1968.
Well, let's talk about the music, because how important is the music of Johann Strauss, Richard Strauss, George Ligeti to the success of that film?
Well, I mean, Kubrick was first and foremost a filmmaker, and you know, he started his career as a photographer, I think for Look magazine. So he came from that photographic background, but he clearly had an interest in all of his films in bringing the musical landscape together with the visual. And so his selections of these works are incredibly important to the final. You know, it's not a heavily dialogue-driven film. In fact, there are long stretches of the film with no dialogue and sometimes even with no sound. And so music for Kubrick was not an incidental element. It was an element that he really wanted to have impact and be part of the overall artistic texture.
From someone with a science and engineering future, how did that music affect you when you were seeing it on the screen?
Well, I mean, the imagery I saw on the screen, looking at the moon base, looking at the space station, look at the space shuttle, looking at that amazing spacecraft Discovery 1, and with the beautiful music playing with it, it really just transformed the experience for me. It brought me to space, actually. I felt like I was floating around in space. I felt I was on that ship from Earth orbit to the moon. So it really transformed me.
Can I just add one thing about the music, which I think is really important to remember, that the music that's in this film, so you've got the famous Blue Danube waltzes. You have the opening of Alza Sprague's Zarathustra by Richard Strauss. You have 40 minutes of Ligeti, who was at that point a very contemporary, not well-known composer in Europe, writing micropolyphony, which is not just different layers and textures, but actually microtonal.
Well, you're getting exactly to what my next question is.
But I want to make a point that was not the music that was intended to be
right,
in the film.
Right. It was supposed to be, let's see, what was
Alex
his name?
Alex North.
Right. Because he got kicked off at the last minute of the production of
the film. The urban myth, or maybe a myth, that he didn't discover that his music was not in the film until he was in the theater at the premiere, which must have made for a little bit of discomfort.
So it would appear to this uninformed high school band dropout that Ligeti's pieces are not the easiest to perform, especially for the chorus. Tell me about those works, the two works that are his.
Well, the two works he really draws from is a movement from his Requiem called Lux Aeterna, and then also a piece called Adventures. But they are really predicated on something called micropolyphony. And so you've got multiple layers of harmony on top of one another, but then what Ligeti is doing is also using what's called microtonality. So, you know, we think of do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do, but there are obviously frequencies in between those notes, and so Ligeti is using this kind of what we call microtonal music to create a very atmospheric kind of sound. And actually one of his most famous works is coincidentally called Atmosphere. So the Ligeti, you know, everyone remembers the famous music in 2001, but there are 40 minutes of Ligeti, and, you know, it's really, and he actually didn't know that Kubrick was using this music, and actually there was a settlement later on after the film gained, you know, the huge notoriety that it did. And Ligeti was not necessarily a big Kubrick fan, but Kubrick continued to use Ligeti's music fully licensed in subsequent pictures. But it's an amazing texture that is woven through the film, and you can understand the type of this kind of surreal, especially when in those scenes, he's really looking to build a very specific kind of atmosphere.
Tension, yeah.
Tension, absolutely.
There's an article in The Guardian. Conductor Robert Ziegler wrote, Kubrick's use of Johann Strauss's waltz, The Beautiful Blue Danube, was a stroke of absolute genius in the way that it was used. When you hear The Blue Danube, what pops into your mind?
The scenes from that movie, without a doubt, the majesty associated with space travel. And engineering is a left brain and a right brain enterprise. And I think some people don't realize the creativity associated with engineering. So many engineers are musicians. And so it's not so alien when you think about it. When you think about a beautiful car or a beautiful piece of technology or even your phone and things like that, there's an element of technology, you know, that's associated with left brain, but there's also a very highly creative aspect of it associated with your right brain.
Of course, we've got to talk about Zarathustra. Why does that work so well with 2001: A Space Odyssey? Because that's the song that first comes to mind for most people regarding that movie.
Sure. I mean, the question I always wonder is, The Blue Danube waltzes were well known prior to this film, but the opening of Zarathustra was not. In fact, you know, it's often referred to now as the opening of 2001 rather than the actual real name of the
piece. It's the theme movie. It's the theme music of the movie. Yeah.
Strauss was at, you know, the height of – Richard Strauss was at the height of his powers, you know, when he wrote this. He was writing a series. He was one of the first composers to really write what we call programmatic music, so music that was specifically trying to depict – a story or an aesthetic in a more literal way musically. Look, it's just an incredible, uncanny opening, and what's really going to be exciting is that there's actually organ in that opening. And more often than not, you're in a concert hall where you have to use what we lovingly call a toaster rather than an organ. You're using an electronic organ.
Right.
But in Hill Auditorium, of course, we have this wonderful historic
pipe organ. Yeah.
Pipe organ, yeah. That will make that opening just be thunderous and incredibly high impact. Mm.
This film is a favorite as far as live music performances, I understand. Different outfits have been doing this for a while. Why do you think that's the case?
Well, I think that obviously music has been an integral part of films. It really hasn't been until the last, I don't know, I want to say like 10 to 20 years where people worked out a way to actually do films, projecting films live and then having the orchestral score to accompany them. And they're often done with what's called a click track, not dissimilar to how they're actually recorded in the studio when the film is in post-production. But this ability to have live performance as part of a film, you know, I remember when we first started in the orchestra business, started doing these, people were like, well, how do you get people to pay more money to actually go and see to go to the movies? But in fact, what's happened is that it really has much more similarity to live performance than it does just showing a film. And in this case, we have the Detroit Symphony coming. We have Musica Sacra, which is one of the really most outstanding contemporary music choruses in New York. We have conductor Robert Ziegler coming. So it's really a complex endeavor. And it goes without saying, but I'll say it for sure, really this could not have happened without the partnership with Michigan Engineering. Alec and I started talking about this, you know, the idea of collaborating between the institutions, and we hit on this as an early idea, and just his belief in the project and the school's belief in the project and embracing it and using it as a platform to have a whole range of discussions is really inspirational.
Alec, I'm going to give you the last word. I'm wondering, what is the sweet moment you're going to be looking for in the film and with the music?
Well, the opening is just going to be amazing, of course. But I would say the film has so many layers of complexity associated, and it's a wonderment. I look at this as not necessarily a film with live music, but almost a live music playing with imagery that makes you think about some profound ideas. The dawn of intelligence on the human species, extraterrestrial life, the thought of humans being able to evolve to even a more advanced state of being and things of that. And therefore, so you see the transition when primitive pre-human apes had, with the help of aliens, discovered the use of tools in the form of bones. And this creature throws it up, and then millions of years forward, it transitions into a spacecraft. I thought it was the most powerful part of the film.
That is without question one of the most stunning elements of the film.
That is Matthew Van Biesen, president of the University Musical Society, along with Alec Gallimore, dean of the University of Michigan's College of Engineering. Thanks to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The film 2001, A Space Odyssey, will be shown with accompanying live orchestra and chorus at Hill Auditorium tonight at 8 o'clock. The event is free, but you have to sign up. Check out ums.org for more information.